Hello, and welcome to Notes on the Week Ahead, a JP Morgan Asset Management podcast that provides insights on the markets and the economy to help you stay informed in the week ahead.
Hello, this is David Kelly. I'm Chief Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. Today's March 4th, 2024. On Friday, December 29th, 1989, the Nikkei 225 stock index hit an all-time high of 38,957. Then it began to fall, and it took until February 22nd of this year, more than a third of a century later, to reach this level again. Today, for the first time, it closed above 40,000. This ultra-long bear market in Japanese stocks was accompanied by the collapse of a colossal property bubble and was followed by decades of economic stagnation, rising government debt, and periodic deflation. While Japan still faces many challenges today, there are signs that it is turning a corner from both an economic and financial perspective. However, decades of Japanese economic and financial malaise provide some powerful lessons for Japan itself and for governments, monetary authorities, and investors around the world. Before looking at what went wrong in Japan over the past three decades, it's important to understand what went right up to that point. In the 1980s, Japan was rightly regarded as an economic powerhouse. Aggressive industrial policy in the years following the end of World War II allowed Japan to build new infrastructure and productive capacity. This was initially led by heavily integrated industrial conglomerates and aided by easy monetary policy. Living standards advanced very rapidly. However, Japan, in sharp contrast to the United States, maintained a very high saving rate, funding investment to further increase productivity. A very disciplined workforce operating in state-of-the-art factories produced high-quality products, and Japanese manufacturing became increasingly sophisticated, migrating from textiles and basic goods to high-end electronics and vehicles. Partly due to a lack of domestic energy sources, Japanese vehicles were designed to be more fuel-efficient. And as the oil shocks of the 1970s and 1980s hit, Japanese exports surged, as did Japan's trade surplus more generally, allowing the domestic economy to boom on the back of foreign demand. The success of Japanese companies and the increasing wealth of average Japanese families contributed to twin bubbles in stock and property prices. At its peak in 1989, the Nikkei 225 was selling at a lagged P/E ratio of 60 times, and Japanese stocks accounted for an astonishing 44% of the capitalized value of the MSCI All World Index. At the peak of the property bubble, it was famously calculated that the land occupied by the Imperial Palace and grounds in Tokyo was worth more than the land under the entire state of California. And then things began to go south. In the mid-1980s, the US in particular was alarmed by its huge trade deficit with Japan and demanded the central banks work to boost the Japanese currency. Following the Plaza Accord of 1985, the yen surged from 250 per US dollar to just 100 per US dollar. This slowed the Japanese export machine, and with the economy slowing, the bubbles in the stock and property markets burst, setting the stage for recession and deflation. Japan's journey since then can teach us, or rather remind us of, some important realities of modern economies. Lesson 1. There are few economic swamps harder to escape than a property bust. Japanese property prices, and particularly commercial property prices, were wildly inflated by the end of the 1980s. However, as is generally the case in real estate bubbles, when prices began to fall, it took an agonizingly long time for them to find a bottom. Indeed, Japanese residential property prices fell almost continuously from 1991 to 2009 and only began a slow recovery in 2014, leaving prices far below their bubble levels. Commercial real estate prices saw an even more dramatic decline. This long period of declining asset prices had a knock-on effect of depressing consumer and business confidence and undermining bank capital positions. The good news is that this long decline in property prices appears to have ended, with increases in home prices and rents in recent years from much more reasonable levels. The Japanese experience, along with the more recent US experience of the mid-2000s property bubble, should serve as a warning to central banks about the dangers of low rates as fuel for property speculation. It's also one of the key reasons why we remain cautious about the Chinese outlook, given the importance of home construction to Chinese GDP and of overinflated home values to household wealth. Lesson 2. Without immigration, a shrinking population can undercut economic dynamism. A second difficulty faced by Japan in recent decades has been a worsening population problem. Japan's population peaked in 2011 at just under 128 million people and has been shrinking ever since. This problem is now accelerating. According to information released by the Japanese Health Ministry just in the last week, the number of babies born in Japan in 2023 fell to a modern era low of just under 760,000. Meanwhile, the number of people dying rose to a record high of 1.59 million, more than twice the number of births. Moreover, despite some recent reforms designed to attract foreign workers, net immigration continues to be small for reasons of both culture and geography. As the population ages, the number of births will likely decline further, while the number of deaths will sadly increase. This shrinking population is clearly a headwind for consumer demand and will limit the need for new infrastructure and housing. It should be noted that the IMF projects that the population will also shrink in China, Germany, and Italy in the years ahead, although not at the same pace as in Japan. In the US, current trends suggest that the difference between births and deaths could turn negative within the next decade. In this context, the United States still has an advantage over its global competitors due to strong net immigration after the pandemic. That being said, this is an advantage that could easily be squandered if the chaotic nature of the current immigration surge leads to a very sharp containment of all immigration in the years ahead, rather than a disciplined overhaul of the immigration system. Lesson 3. Deflation undermines both economic and financial performance. A third problem that has dogged the Japanese economy has been deflation. Indeed, since 1990, Japan experienced 11 years of declining consumer prices compared to just one for the United States. Deflation has a number of debilitating impacts on a modern economy. Central bankers often decry the fact that with consumer prices falling, it's virtually impossible to stimulate the economy through negative interest rates in real terms. Labor economists point out that in a world of low productivity growth, deflation in output prices implies the need to cut wages or suffer an increase in unemployment. However, the most insidious economic evil from deflation is that it rewards consumers and businesses for doing nothing. While an aging Japanese population has led to a long-term downward trend in the personal saving rate, Japanese households have tended to hoard assets in short-term savings accounts rather than investing them in riskier assets or enterprises. Similarly, Japanese corporations have held huge quantities of cash on their balance sheets, reducing the return on corporate equity. This is perhaps the most important area of change for the Japanese economy in the last few years. In January, core inflation, measured as the year-over-year change in CPI excluding fresh food, came in at 2.0%, marking the 22nd straight month where core inflation has been at or above the Bank of Japan's 2% target. This return to solidly positive inflation will need to be validated by higher wage growth going forward, and observers will be closely watching the results of the annual spring wage negotiations. However, it appears, for now, that Japan has at last fully emerged from the morphine drip of deflation. Lesson number 4. Neither half-hearted fiscal stimulus nor super-low interest rates boost demand in the long run. While a return to positive inflation is a welcome development, it does not entitle either fiscal or monetary authorities to take a victory lap. Fiscal policy in Japan has been singularly ineffective at boosting demand in recent decades. This is not because the government has refused to take on debt. On the contrary, according to the International Monetary Fund, gross government debt in Japan has grown from 66% of GDP in 1989 to 255% today, and is twice as large relative to the economy as is the case for the United States. However, for many years, fiscal stimulus was doled out in very modest amounts, enough to build debt, but not enough to shake the economy from its deflationary stupor. Moreover, this stimulus was frequently interrupted by plans for fiscal consolidation, usually through a planned increase in the sales tax, a tactic that tended to suppress consumer demand even more. The half-hearted nature of fiscal stimulus has been modified somewhat in recent years with massive Bank of Japan quantitative easing, which has left the bank holding more than half of the global supply of JGBs. But monetary easing itself has also been ineffective in stimulating domestic demand. However, as the Federal Reserve and other major central banks have begun tightening policy, continued very low interest rates in Japan have had the beneficial effect of depressing the yen. The yen has now fallen from 103 to the dollar at the start of 2021, to 150 today. This is boosting Japanese exports, adding to overall demand. Equally important, over 50% of the revenue of Japanese listed stocks comes from abroad, so weak yen has boosted both profits and revenue growth. Lesson 5. A healthy stock market requires an investor-friendly environment. One key lesson from the recent better performance of the Japanese stock market is the importance of an investor-friendly environment. In recent years, the Japanese government has promoted various measures to reduce corporate cross-holdings and to require independent directors. The Tokyo Stock Exchange has also asked all listed companies to improve profitability and valuations. One key target has been the cash hoard of Japanese firms, where half the companies have more cash than debt on their balance sheets. As some companies have deployed this cash in stock buybacks and dividends, they've seen their share prices rewarded, an outcome that will likely encourage others to follow suit. Lesson 6. Valuations matter in the long run. The recent surge in interest in Japan and the outperformance of Japanese stocks in recent months could lead some to believe that they have missed the boat and that valuations will constrain further stock market gains. This may eventually be the case. However, it should be noted that even after producing the best dollar-denominated returns of any major stock market year to date, the MSCI Japan is trading at roughly 16 times forward earnings compared to almost 21 times for the S&P 500. Valuations matter. They mattered at the end of 1989 when Japanese stocks were, by one measure, trading at almost 60 times lagged earnings compared to 15 times for U.S. equities. And they matter today when U.S. stocks are 25% more expensive than their Japanese counterparts. Japan still faces significant challenges. However, given the positives of a low yen, the return of inflation, a renewed focus on shareholder interests, and still attractive valuations relative to U.S. stocks, investors looking for portfolio diversification after a huge run-up in U.S. equities may want to take a closer look at Japan.
Well, that's it for this week. Please tune in again next week, and if you have any questions in the meantime, please reach out to your J.P. Morgan representative.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.